This is the Drive and Dish podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
You haven't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
He really does.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than him.
And Justin Kuzak.
I know. I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
Well, it's been an age-old debate. One that we've had many times on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. That is a hot dog, a sandwich. And before you all start groaning and rolling your eyes, we're not going to do that again. It's been beaten to death. However, when we were recording or getting ready to record this, and I guess our pre-show banter, if you will, Justin posed the question tonight, is a quesadilla a sandwich? And so I'm going to let Justin explain himself here. And because I got to ask, Justin, why are you doing this to the people again?
Well, no, we're like, so I'm getting on the computer, hopping on the Twitter, you know, as you do when you're getting ready for an interview, just to kind of see what's going on. And this guy, Lucas Han, posts, is a quesadilla sandwich? Nothing else. That's just what he posts. And I saw it and I go, ah, damn it. And I like how Twitter didn't understand it so much that it literally has a translate this tweet option. Because it's just not a normal sentence that somebody says. So, but then I got thinking, and it's like, well, you know, I mean, the same debate that they took with the hot dog is, well, it has to be two pieces of bread with meat in between, and I mean, that's technically a quesadilla, no?
Well, technically, yes, but is a tortilla bread?
I mean, it's you know, flour.
Well, it could be corn.
Well, cornbread is a thing, too, but you don't really put that on sandwiches. But you know what I mean?
Cornbread is delicious.
It is great. Some of the tweets back to him. Someone said, no, it's a Mexican omelet, which I don't think that's right either.
Well, I mean, a breakfast burrito, I feel like, is more of a Mexican omelet just because of all the things that are in it. It's like wrapped up in a tortilla. That makes it a burrito, not an omelet. An omelet doesn't have bread in it.
Well, here's the other thing. Lucas is coming into this saying hot dogs are definitely sandwiches. So,
oh, well, then this guy's already not credible.
Well, there you go. But I'm just saying, so his whole thing is if ham and Swiss on flatbread is a sandwich and grilled cheese is a sandwich, then quesadillas are those two combined with still bread, so it's a sandwich, no?
I mean, I guess my whole thing is just like a tortilla is not bread to me. That's where it breaks for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't consider a tortilla bread.
So the what they've kind of come to on this like list of people angry tweeting at him, they kind of seem to end up here saying it's a fried sandwich.
I mean, I don't want sandwich after quesadilla. I love quesadillas. I feel like Tim is going to listen to this intro and have like seven jokes about this, which that's an inside thing for neither here nor today, but something that is for here and today. The Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Welcome, everybody. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Usually to my left is my co-host, Tim Tompkins. Tim is sitting this one out. You know,
radio
that,
life.
Unfortunately.
Hashtag
yeah,
radio
you know,
life.
But it's a much later installment than previously of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. But someone that is here behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Giggity, although we might be changing the intro soon, so who knows what we'll be doing in the next few weeks.
Oh, but the intro, are we changing the show intro too?
I don't know, man. Everyone's hating on it.
Oh, well, no. I get that, the actual intro, but like when you, me, and Tim introduce ourselves,
no,
I mean,
yeah.
That's...
Look, I'm reading tweets. People are like, oh, yeah, I normally skip the first 5 minutes of you guys talking. I don't need to hear that here.
we've always built the, that's funny. I'm a little distracted by that, but I mean, no, like, you know. We advertise the show as saying, if you're looking for basketball content, probably not coming until about 5 or 6 minutes in.
Right. No, so, and that's fine. Skip the first 15. I mean, as long as you listen, I'm happy that you listen, you know?
Yeah. You know, this is a midweek episode. Obviously, as you heard Justin say, giggity there. We've got Joe Mullinax joining us. He's going to break down all things Grizzlies, and we're really excited to bring you guys this convo. Joe is great, as always.
Look, I don't know about you, but I do know one thing, and that is the end of the season. And I want to get to as many games as possible. And frankly, I'm a podcaster, so I don't make that much money. So the cheaper, the better. And that philosophy might work out for you, too. And that's why SeatGeek is the smartest way to find tickets for the basketball games you want to see live and up close. There is nothing like being in the building for the biggest games in the year because, yes, basketball is better in person. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way that I've found to buy basketball tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find the seats this weekend, this week, or for any game of the season. And with SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because of SeatGeek. The tickets are aggregated from all over the internet. They show you if it's a good deal. You know upfront whether or not it's a good deal. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guaranteed. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And the best of all, Drive and Dish podcast listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. And all you got to do is download the SeatGeek app to get your $20 rebate on tickets. Download the app. It's available for iPhone, Android, smart this, smart that. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo. Enter the promo code DISH, like drive and dish, dish, D-I-S-H, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code DISH today. If you forget, all the info is on driveanddishpodcast.com as well.
Phoenix fans, say it with me. We are PHX. We are PHX. I want you to check out a brand new Phoenix Suns podcast called The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast. Tim Tompkins, Greg Esposito, Dave King for a weekly Phoenix Suns podcast. You can find The Solar Panel, Phoenix Suns podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and sunspodcast.com. We are PHX. We are PHX.
Very poorly officiated basketball game. Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had zero free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team. Explain it to me. We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class. And he just plays the game, but I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in that game, and they did not even give us a chance. Take that for data.
And you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. Earlier when we talked about the Grizzlies and Spurs series in our last few episodes, frankly, when the Grizzlies went down 0-2, I don't want to say we were negative, but there was a little bit, especially with the streak that the Spurs had going over the Grizzlies in recent years, that Memphis could be in trouble. And then David Fizdale, at the end of Game 2, delivered one of the more memorable press conferences that I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, obviously, they're not going to rook us. Take that for data. Everybody loved it, ate it up. And since then, I don't know if that became the rallying call, but Memphis has come back. They've won both their games at home, 3-4. And that's why I wanted to bring this guy in. We've got a special guest here on the program today, friend of the show, Mr. Joe Mullinax. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. He's the site manager for GrizzlyBearBlues.com, also the host of the Grizzly Bear Blues Live podcast. And we are super excited to have Joe back on again. You know, Joe, a lot of these people are calling this the game of the playoffs, and there's been a lot of Memphis love in the last few days. So it's fitting that we have you on here, and we're going to get into the X's and O's. There's a lot to talk about, but I got to ask you because, you know, when we've had you on the pod in the past, we've talked about the Memphis culture and we've talked about, you know, this team and how long they play together and key moments. So I don't want to get too hot takey out of the rip, but you know, you're someone who's been following the Grindhouse era. The place was absolutely rocking in Game 4 and especially afterwards. So, you know, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves because this series is far from over, so there could be many more moments to come. But at the same time, you know, that Game 4 win, where does that rank for you? Because it was absolutely electric.
Well, first off, Kevin and Justin, thanks for having me back on. I love your guys' show. I'm excited to be back on the podcast here. And it definitely ranks up there. It's high. There's other wins that they've had the Game 6 in 2013 against the Clippers. That was essentially like a WWE match. If you remember, Zach Randolph getting ejected, skipping off the floor, throwing his headband into the stands. I was there for that game, and for me, that's number one in terms of Grizzlies playoff wins of all time. The Grizzlies getting their first playoff win ever in the 2011 series against the Spurs, beating the Thunder on the road to make it to the Western Conference Finals. So I think there's some games that are in front of this one, but I do think that, A, this will be on every list that people have from this grit and grind era, as you referenced earlier, and B, if you want to talk about two of the biggest shots in Grizzlies history, I think that the Mike Conley floater to put it into overtime and the Marc Gasol game winner are probably, you know, the Gasol shot being number one and Conley being number two. So I think that's the biggest takeaway, is there have been bigger games and bigger wins, but there haven't necessarily been bigger shots. And the fact that they were both made by two guys that you have invested in a tremendous amount of time, a tremendous amount of money, and they're two guys that are invested in the city. Over at grizzlybearblues.com this past Monday this week, we had a post by one of our writers called The Hug Heard Round the World, and I would highly recommend that if nobody has seen that picture and read that article, that they do that, because you want to talk about, you know, kind of pulling at your heartstrings. It's those two guys arm in arm walking off the court together, waving to the crowd. It's like they're carrying each other off of the FedEx Forum floor. And, you know, I talked with Ryan Rucco, and I know we'll talk a little bit about this later, in my game. I do Grizzly Thoughts during the playoffs. And in my Game 4 ones, we had the opportunity to talk with ESPN's Ryan Rucco, who did the play-by-play for Game 4. And it really is fascinating, after talking with him, more and more national media, whenever I get a chance to talk with national folks, and you guys count towards that as well, you know, it's kind of a people are starting to see what we've seen all along as Memphis Grizzlies fans and people who follow the team. This is unique. There is not anything else. You know, maybe Oklahoma City, maybe the Portland Trail Blazers, but at least in the NBA, there is nothing else like the Memphis Grizzlies. The connection between the team and the city, it was like every time Kawhi Leonard, who's a robot, who came from the future to destroy us all, whether it's Kawhi Leonard being a freak, you know, every time he made a shot, it was like the team, like the city got punched in the gut, you know, and every time Gasol or Conley or Andrew Harrison or Jamichael Green, every time one of these guys makes a play, it's like everybody makes the play. And that sounds so cliche. And there's probably people listening to this, you know, Sacramento Kings fans or Philadelphia 76ers fans. Oh, really? Like, you're waxing nostalgic on me on a podcast. But I'm being serious. Like, that's what made me fall in love with the team in the first place, was that emotion that was created in that first playoff run in 2011 when they upset the San Antonio Spurs and when they found a way to push, I believe it was Game 6 or Game 7 against the Oklahoma City Thunder in that second round. They almost upset the Thunder before they made it to the NBA Finals. So it's amazing to me that this run, because most people in Memphis are kind of coming to grips with the idea, whether it's Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, perhaps even both, that this is going to be the end of this era, more than likely. One of those guys is probably not coming back if you look at the cap situation. It just doesn't make a ton of sense unless they take massive hometown discounts, which is possible but unlikely. If this is it, if the Grizzlies lost Game 5 and then lost Game 6, most people were picking the Spurs in 5 or 6, so obviously 5 is out the window. So to me, that makes it somewhat successful in and of itself. But if that was it, if Game 4 was the last win of this era of basketball, people will be disappointed in Memphis, but I think people will also look back on it and say, wow, that was a cool two-game stretch. Whether it's the Game 3, which was really that emotionally charged, like you talked about, take that for data, the press conference from David Fizdale. To me, that was the game that was impacted by that. And I thought that was very smart of David Fizdale to deflect the fact that the Grizzlies had lost two games by an average of 20-some points off on, you know, take that for data and that sort of thing. I don't think it was pre-orchestrated, but I do think he had the idea of trying to take the attention away from what was happening and try to give a rallying cry. That was Game 3. Game 4, the Spurs were playing pretty good basketball. Kawhi Leonard was a monster. He had one of the best games of the playoffs so far, and it was in a losing effort. To me, that's what gives me hope, is Game 4. I had the Spurs winning in 5, so I knew I hoped that they would win at least one game at home. But Game 4 is what gives me hope, and it probably shouldn't give me hope because the Spurs are robots, and they're probably, you know, pursuing destruction as we speak. But at the same time, that game four is what Believe Memphis is all about. And I think that if that is the lasting legacy, if that's the last home game that they win, I think that it'll be fitting.
Coach Fizdale is one of the newer members of Grit and Grind and now probably has the ultimate rallying cry for it. I found that a bit entertaining. And so now, you know, we talk about those adjustments after the first two games, and we're going to talk about guarding Kwai, or at least attempting to guard Kwai, in a little bit. But, you know, talking about Coach Fizdale, obviously a newer member of the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, the first two games not going as planned, making the adjustments or three or four, again, not too shabby for a coach going up against the well-oiled machine, like you said, that is the Spurs. So what type of adjustments in particular? You know, I know Zach Randolph, for example, going to the bench, or Jermichael Green, excuse me, going to the bench, Zach Randolph coming back into the starting lineup. But what adjustments in particular do you think Coach Fizdale made that really worked and kind of keyed the Grizz in 3 and 4?
Well, I think shortening the rotation, and we talked about this for an article that'll be up on the blog on Tuesday. Wayne Selden Jr. is actually getting a lot of run in these playoffs, shockingly so. I thought it would be Troy Daniels kind of getting those minutes, and that would be a change that I would like to see Coach Fizdale make. But Wayne Selden has 88 minutes played. He's played just as many minutes as Andrew Harrison. Selden was the starter in games 1 and 2 for the Grizzlies, filling in for Tony Allen. So Wayne Selden getting less minutes, getting so many minutes, that is an adjustment. I think David Fizdale wanted to go bigger on the perimeter. You saw James Ennis getting the start instead of Selden. James Ennis is a bigger wing. So now you have Vince Carter kind of as that traditional two. He had played a lot more three this year alongside Tony Allen. And on the perimeter, as you know, positionless basketball, we can talk about all that. But anyway, they got bigger on the wing. I think that was a major adjustment. I think moving Jermichael Green to the bench was a solid decision. He didn't play well in San Antonio in his two starts, only played 29 minutes total between those two games. And then coming into Memphis, he had a much more energetic performance. He seemed to be more comfortable going against the Spurs reserves. And Zach Randolph, of course, as you mentioned, he's much more comfortable as a starter. You know, he was professional about being moved to that six-man role, but he didn't like it. I think anybody who says he was excited about it is lying to you. He probably thought it was wrong, but he did what was best for the team, and now he's being asked to be a starter again against the Spurs front court that is kind of more conducive to what Zach is able to do offensively and defensively at this stage, and it makes sense to have him in that role, at least for this series. I think that David Fizdale has definitely looked at playing Andrew Harrison a good bit. He's played 87 minutes in the series. We talked about shortening the rotation, James Ennis playing 100 minutes, and he's really kind of been tasked more often than not with trying to defend Kawhi. Now, that's impossible. After watching four games, I'm fully convinced that Kawhi Leonard is the second best player in the NBA. That's not a knock on James Harden or Russell Westbrook, because those two guys are freaks and they're tremendous basketball players as well. But there is nobody aside from LeBron James who impacts a basketball game on both ends of the floor like Kawhi Leonard does. It's just not human what he has done to the Grizzlies. And James Ennis has been given an impossible task to try to slow down Kawhi. And they've also done other things with Kawhi, whether it's Vince Carter on Kawhi, whether it's, you know, even Jermichael Green in small line or in big lineups with Jermichael at the three, Andrew Harrison, maybe a little bit trying to defend him, Wayne Selden. They've thrown different bodies at Kawhi trying to find ways to stop him. I think the major adjustment in terms of how they're staying with the Spurs is the more of a long-term adjustment, and that's the development of Mike Conley. I mean, Mike Conley is a legitimate superstar in the NBA right now, and he's really having his coming out party in this series. He is averaging a ton of points per game right now, 24 points per game, almost 8 assists, 4 rebounds. He's shooting 48% from three, guys, 48% for the series. So he is having a monster series. He has really been the leader and the catalyst for everything that Memphis has done. And him getting that opportunity, him being that focus of the offense, that is something that's been happening all season, but it's really kind of coming to fruition and really flourishing in the playoffs, which is impressive considering Kawhi Leonard, especially in game four, has been given the assignment of defending Mike Conley more. In the past, that's been a checkmate for the Grizzlies. You can't do anything, huh? Kawhi's on Mike. But they're finding ways, whether it's having him off the ball, whether it's running him off screens, whether it's having a higher pick and roll, and obviously the range of Gasol makes it a little bit easier as well, the newfound range. They're finding ways to get Mike Conley the ball and allowing him to be successful, even when Kawhi Leonard is on him, as successful as he can be. Again, Kawhi is one of the best defenders in the league. So Mike Conley is really the major adjustment, and it's more of a long-term adjustment. This Mike Conley, the Spurs have never seen this Mike Conley before. To be honest with you, none of us have. And he is really taking this opportunity and running with it.
You kind of brought up my question with Zach Randolph and Gasol and Connolly. All guys have been playing well. I know Zach, that first game, a lot of people were talking about how it was not a good performance from him. But I guess if you had to pick who has been the most, I know you were saying Mike Conley, no one's seen this before. Would you say he's the most surprising of this series, or is there another player that's kind of really stepped up their game and impressed you in the playoffs?
Mike Conley's not necessarily surprising because I expected him to play. I expect him to be the best player for the Grizzlies because right now he is the best player for the Grizzlies. Marc Gasol, you know, is obviously 1B, and I think they're both pretty interchangeable. But Mike Conley right now as a scorer, as a facilitator, he's just the best player on the team at this moment. For me, the most surprising player of the series, at least on the Grizzlies, is Andrew Harrison. Here's a guy who's really kind of been left for dead by a lot of Grizzlies fans. Memphis has a ceremonial trash heap of backup point guards from Gilbert Arenas to Nick Calathes to all sorts of different guys. We had one glorious flash of maybe we found the guy in Mario Chalmers, and then he got injured. And aside from that, the past 6 years or so, Memphis has really struggled with finding a backup point guard. And now you're dealing with Andrew Harrison, who got invested in over the course of the regular season, 75 games he played, or excuse me, not 75, but he plays in multiple games over the course of the season. He plays almost 1,500 minutes. David Fizdale invests in him. David Fizdale does what fans have been clamoring for all along, play a younger player, and he struggled. He struggled shooting. He had a terrible PER. But in the playoffs, he's really kind of stepped up. He is third on the team behind Gasol and Conley in win shares for 48 minutes, according to basketballreference.com. Third on the team in PER. There are guys that are struggling if you just look at the numbers. Again, the eye test kind of tells you different. Andrew Harrison's not one of them. Andrew Harrison is a guy who's really kind of rising to the occasion. He made huge plays in that game four game, whether it's the steal and then the and one on the opposite end, whether it's the chase down block like LeBron James, and it results in the Gasol and one during overtime. I mean, that's a 5-point swing. That is a massive play in the course of that game, and it doesn't happen if it's not for the effort and energy of Andrew Harrison. So on the Grizzlies, it's Andrew Harrison. On the Spurs, I'm stunned that Manu Ginobili is playing this poorly. He hasn't scored yet in the playoffs. He's 0-for. And that is shocking as someone, as you guys mentioned, you know, I've been covering the Grizzlies now for a little over 5 years, so most of this grit and grind era. And Manu Ginobili is a Grizz killer. You know, he's a bona fide Hall of Famer. I have nothing but respect for the game of Manu Ginobili. But he's either really cold or he's done. It's one of those two things. I'm leaning towards really cold. I anticipate Manu not, you know, going 0 for the series, however long the series goes. But how much he has struggled has surprised me. Manu Ginobili, that is. So the most surprising player overall for me from the Grizzlies is Andrew Harrison.
He had a monster block in that last game that we were watching.
Huge play.
Oh, it was monster. It was amazing. Sorry, Kevin, not to cut you off.
Oh, no, trust me, no one will. I will never argue with monster blocks, and it was indeed a monster block. So, you know, got to get that in here. A guy that the Grizzlies have been without, Mr. Tony Allen, huge loss on the defensive end. How have the Grizz made up for not having him this entire series?
They've gone they've gone tighter rotation than they probably thought they would at this point. Vince Carter has played a ton of playoff minutes so far. He's played 130 minutes. That's third on the team. He's absorbing minutes right now, and that kind of makes you nervous. Thankfully, there's no back-to-backs or anything like that. The Grizzlies had a couple of nights off heading into Game 5. So it's probably not as big of a deal in the playoffs, but a 40-year-old playing 130 minutes in a playoff series feels like a lot. So that has been an adjustment, kind of Vince Carter being that starter, being that guy that's depended on in that fourth best player role, so to speak, or at least in terms of production, in terms of they need him to shoot threes. And he's done well in this playoff series. He's shooting 41.7% from three in the four games so far. So he's kind of owning up to what his job is on this team, to space the floor and take the threes. They've tried to replace him with James Ennis, Wayne Selden, and it's impossible to replace Tony Allen, not even necessarily just in his defensive acumen. I do think Kawhi Leonard would be a little bit more controlled. I think he'd still get his, but I think that it wouldn't be quite as massive what he's done if Tony Allen was playing. I think that they miss his energy. You know, it was kind of manufactured by Fizdale in that take that for data and they ain't going to rook us. And the game three and game four in the grindhouse where that was kind of the rallying cry like we talked about. I think that's where they miss Tony the most because Tony is that spark plug. You know, right or wrong, good or bad, trick or treat Tony brings the energy. And you kind of take the good with the bad in that way because of that intensity that he injects this team with when he plays. So he's been missed in that way more than any. Of course, defending Kawhi, but you're not going to stop Kawhi. Even Tony Allen's not stopping Kawhi. You can maybe slow him down a little bit. Where the Grizzlies have really missed him is just in kind of that leadership energy role where he's that dude who gets everybody kind of fired up.
Well, and you kind of mentioned this at the very beginning of this episode about how, you know, when one player on the Grizzlies makes a shot, it's like everyone makes a shot. And so I was looking at it, and, you know, obviously the two wins came at home. You know, how much do you contribute their wins to that home field advantage? I was looking at, I think they're minus 21 on the road in San Antonio, and I know that's San Antonio has a huge home field advantage. So, is it kind of the same way when they're coming into Memphis?
I think it's pretty big. I won't lie to you. I think that was a major part of it, especially in Game 3. The Spurs kind of ran into a buzzsaw there in that third game of the series. I think game four is more along the lines of what you'll see moving forward because in game two, in the second half of game two, is when you saw that initial adjustment to bring in James Ennis and Zach Randolph instead of Jermichael Green and Wayne Seldon. They make that switch at the beginning of the second half of game two. And since then, the Grizzlies have really been even keel with the Spurs. They played pretty well in that game two against the Spurs in the second half. And I think that you'll see in game five, while the Spurs are still favored, I believe the line is like 9.5 or 10. And I understand that completely. I mean, again, the Spurs are the two seed. They're one of the best teams in the NBA. The Grizzlies are not. So it's logical that it's there. But at the same time, I think you're going to see a closer game because they've made their adjustment. And I don't think that the Spurs have the horses, or not necessarily have the horses, but, you know, there's not a ton of adjusting that they can do. You can't start Kawhi at the four and bring in a Manu Ginobili or a Kyle Anderson or something like that. Going small makes you lesser. So what is the Spurs' strength in terms of having LaMarcus Aldridge, Dwayne Dedman, you know, Pau Gasol? That's the Grizzlies' strength, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Jermichael Green. So they're going to traditionally have those two bigs. That's not necessarily going to hurt Memphis. So I think what you saw in game four, outside of maybe trying to trap Conley a little bit more on the pick and roll, not give him as clean of looks coming off of that, I think that in game five, regardless of the fact it's going to be in San Antonio, it's going to be a closer game because Memphis has made those adjustments. They're in a place now with Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, those players, they have that energy from the grindhouse, which, like I said, especially in game three, that was massive. But now they believe that they can beat the Spurs team when the Spurs play well. Because in game four, the Spurs played well. It's not that the Spurs lost, it's just that the Spurs ran out of time. And those are often the best games. So in game five, I think that the Grizzlies are obviously going into a difficult area in San Antonio, the AT&T Center. Very friendly to the San Antonio Spurs, as well it should be. And I think it's going to be a challenge for them to try to find a way to pick off the Spurs at home. And that's obviously, if the Grizzlies have a hope of winning this series, they're going to have to do that at some point.
Well, and there's just value, too, in surviving. I mean, you just mentioned, the Spurs playing a great game four. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, it looked like he hit dagger after dagger, 40 points. You know, Coach Fizdale after the game is asking people openly if they have any idea how to guard him. But when you look at the Spurs team, more than other versions of the Spurs, you know, there's a lot more responsibility placed on one guy, and that is Kawhi. And, you know, if you're the Grizzlies and you look at, yeah, we withstood 40 points from Kawhi and he was eating long, but at the same time, you know, we came out, we got the W. You know, A, how much confidence does that inspire? And I guess B, do you think they make a conscious effort to kind of make other guys beat them and let Kawhi do Kawhi, or do you think they try to throw something else at him that we haven't seen yet?
And that'll be an interesting wrinkle. I would be interested to see how David Fizdale responds to that, because we haven't seen a ton of that. You know, you've seen a little bit more pressure on the ball in the half or in the full court. And I think that's helped a little bit. But you haven't seen a ton of the double team from David Fizdale. I think he tries to be as one-on-one as he can be, but if you're going to stop Kawhi, you're going to have to start trying to find ways to get that double team, to get that trap, you know, to get him the ball out of his hands. And Kawhi is a willing passer, so that's not necessarily a problem for him. But like you said, if I'm David Fizdale, would I rather Kawhi Leonard shoot an open three or Tony Parker? I mean, even though Tony Parker's had a good series so far, I'd rather Tony Parker 10 times out of 10. Same thing with Danny Green. Danny Green's a good three-point shooter. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Danny Green, but Kawhi Leonard is the second best player in the National Basketball Association. So you bet your tail, I want to get the ball out of his hands. But that would take kind of a change in scheme. And we're still learning about David Fizdale as a head basketball coach. This is his first playoff series ever with the Memphis Grizzlies. And like you mentioned, he's going against arguably the best coach possibly of all time in Greg Popovich. If he's not the best, he's up there. So he's kind of rolling with the punches, trying to respond to what Pop does and vice versa. I think that the lineup change was a major adjustment. And I think it was one that shows humility from Fizdale. I think it shows the ability to acknowledge when you need to make changes, you do it. And with the 2 days off, perhaps he sat down with Nick Van Exel and Keith Smart and his other coaches, and he said, how do we slow down Kawhi? Well, coach, we probably need to make some adjustments and do some double team kind of things. Mm-hmm. But how much does that change scheme? How much do you want to do that after, you know, 82 regular season games and 8 preseason games? I mean, these guys have almost played 100 basketball games at this point. How much do you want to go away with what got you to where you are? Unfortunately, when you don't have Tony Allen, that kind of changes things, and maybe you do have to adapt.
To your point of making Kawhi Leonard pass the ball, at least to Danny Green, at this point in time, I would live and die by that, because he's only shooting 23% from three, but then you look at the rest of the team, and like half of them, like Anderson, Parker, Gasol, Simmons, all shooting over like 55%. It's just the whole team can shoot, so it makes it so much harder. But one of the things I was looking at is the pace of game, because this one's obviously by far the slowest pace, and not too surprising, right below the Utah Jazz and Clippers, but they're running at about an 89.58 pace, and I was kind of looking at their compared to regular season pace, which the Grizzlies were at 94, and I think the Spurs were around 98. So do the Grizzlies benefit more by slowing the game down a lot, you know, compared to the Spurs, or would it be beneficial for the Grizzlies to maybe try to pick up the pace? I know they're, you know, normally a slower paced team, so I don't know if it would throw their mojo off.
Well, as long as you have Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph out on the floor together, you're not going to be a fast paced team. You just can't do it. You have two bigs, true bigs. They're not going to be able to get out and run the way that you'd like them to, although they certainly try. If you've watched the games, Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph both have tried to initiate the break. Sometimes it works well, other times it does not. But when they go with JaMychal Green, and you'll see this a little bit, in an article I wrote about JaMychal Green and Andrew Harrison being unsung heroes over at grizzlybearblues.com, there's a video from game four. They get out and they run, and it's an alley-oop from Mike Conley to JaMychal Green. You know, Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph aren't doing that. So when JaMychal Green is on the floor and you have him alongside, say, Andrew Harrison and Wayne Selden, or Andrew Harrison and James Ennis, you know, those are four guys that can run the floor. Mm-hmm. Those are players that can get out and transition. And Marc Gasol will do his darndest. He's just not that type of athlete. But I would trust Gasol to try to run a little bit more than, say, Zach. So I do think that you're seeing some transition opportunities. David Fizdale wants them to get out and run when Jermichael's in there, because that's somewhere where they have an edge. Because, again, JaMychal Green is more athletic than David Lee. JaMychal Green is more athletic than Pau Gasol. So the bigs of San Antonio are a bit more lumbering, at least when you compare them with JaMychal Green and Brandon Wright, when Brandon Wright plays, although he hasn't played a ton in this series. You know, the Grizzlies, for once, in terms of first to fourth guy on that rotation at the bigs, they're more athletic, and it's JaMychal Green that's the focus. So I think that you'll see, if you watch game five, maybe they're a little bit more methodical when it's Zach and Mark, but as soon as JaMychal comes in, when they have an opportunity to try to score and create and transition, they're going to try to get after it and do that.
Well, that's been one of my big revelations this series, or one trend that I've noticed, really, is, you know, Dedmon is a good rim protector of the Spurs, but, you know, Zach Randolph and JaMychal Green have just had their way with David Lee and Pau Gasol. You know, taking this from the other side, you know, what do you think the Spurs can do to kind of throw, you know, what do they got to throw at them? Because the fact of the matter, I mean, we know Pau and David Lee have never really been great defensive guys, and it just looks like they're getting out muscled down there. You know, what do they do to clog the paint a little bit more and prevent these guys from eating down there?
the main thing they can do to Zach is double team him, because once Zach gets into his move, into his kind of his back to the basket, takes his dribble, drives at the rim, he rarely passes out of it. Now, he did that a little bit more in game four, and it resulted in open threes because the Spurs were trying to crash down on him. So the way that they've been doubling Zach or trying to front him in the post, you just got to keep doing that. I mean, Zach Randolph didn't play that well in game four, and his net rating for the span of the series is a minus 22. So while I don't think Zach is a minus 22 detriment to the team, I do think that there's been more bad than good with him. So whatever they're doing with Randolph, they should keep doing. It's when you have Marc Gasol out there, and I can't stress enough how much the ability to shoot the three has changed everything for this Grizzlies offense, because now you can't have Marc just kind of be sloughed off while he's out in the perimeter. So that creates more space. The game-winning shot against LaMarcus Aldridge. When you're playing other shooters, Troy Daniels was in, and Kawhi was defending Troy Daniels. And if you watch that play, Marc Gasol starts his move, and instead of Kawhi was in a very good position to try to reach at that ball, strip it, try to get a jump ball, something like that. But he was so concerned with Troy Daniels and the fact that Marc is a willing passer out of that move that he stays with Daniels and allows for Marc, and LaMarcus defended the shot well, but it's still a one-on-one shot, and in that particular play, great offense beat good defense. Mm-hmm. So in terms of adjustments for the Spurs, I think just continue to crash down on Zach. If you double-team Marc, he's going to find the passer, and the Grizzlies have shooters that can beat you now. So I don't necessarily think – I think that's a part of what is making Memphis compete, is their clientele is a little bit different in that, you know, yes, you miss Tony Allen's defense, but now you have guys that they have to at least respect from three, like Vince Carter, James Ennis, you know, maybe not Wayne Selden as much, but, you know, even Jamichael Green. Jamichael Green shooting 44% from the field from three so far in this series. So the Grizzlies have guys that can convert that shot, and if you don't defend them, they will make it. So that kind of limits what the Spurs are going to be able to do, and that's terrific for Memphis, and they haven't necessarily had that in previous series against San Antonio.
Okay, so I'm going to try to I'm going to put you in David Fitzdale's position, and I'm going to try to word this as the most comprehensive way possible, because I have this whole idea. I'm looking at the second chance points in the playoffs. Obviously, the Grizzlies are in last place for that. They're only getting about 7.5 a game, but to that, the Spurs are only getting about 10.8. So I think that's a very reachable stat that the Grizzlies might be able to, you know, put that as an area of focus and get a few extra second chance points. That means maybe making the big guys stay down low on the offensive side, and, you know, that obviously being Marc Gasol, but Marc Gasol being your, I mean, percentage-wise, best three-point shooter at 67%, obviously not taking as many as Mike Conley, but also Jamichael Green, Mike Conley, and Vince Carter all shooting above 40%. So do you take the risk and ask Marc to make a conscious effort of staying down low and trying to get those few extra second-chance points that might give them the edge over the Spurs?
No, I wouldn't have Marc do that. Like you just said, he's more of a perimeter-based mm-hmm. player at this point. He plays on the elbow still some, but he's also out at the three-point line. He can play in the post, and he does that, and he does it well still. But he's added the tool of the three-point shot, and that is when the Grizzlies' offense is most efficient, when he is creating from the perimeter. Because, again, that creates more room for slashers. That allows for more pick-and-roll mm-hmm. opportunities for other players, more screens at and around the basket. So I think Marc is best served to be that guy. Now, he currently leads the team in offensive rebounds per game at mm-hmm. 1.3. So he's still kind of grabbing those boards maybe a little more than you would think. But the problem with that is after Marc Gasol, the guy who's tied with him for first is James Ennis at 1.3. Mm-hmm. So you need guys like Zach Randolph, who they're bread and butter. They're paid to go and get those rebounds. You need guys like Zach to get after it a little bit more on the boards and try to prioritize getting those second chance opportunities. You need guys like Jamichael Green as well to do that. So I would say leave Marc out on the perimeter, because of those three players, he's the guy with the more complete skill set in terms of creating for others, in terms of shooting the three. Let Jamichael and Zach kind of do that dirty job of trying to clean the glass and get extra shots for folks.
Yeah, I was going to say, because he's definitely getting 8 rebounds a game, but, you know, for Randolph, it's all on the defensive end, you know, 7.3 compared to 0.8 It's just maybe, I guess, maybe asking someone down there, because it's kind of hard when it's a one-man job, you know? You need someone else down there helping you, boxing out and getting people out of the way so you can get that second chance point.
No, absolutely. I think that's exactly right. You need Zach to be that guy. And you even need wings, like a Wayne Selden. Wayne Selden's shooting 18% from the field from three right now.
Put him down low, so, then. You know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But he's a bigger wing. He's 6'5", 230 or something like that. Let him attack the glass a little bit. Let him crash and try to get some put-back opportunities. It's kind of like hockey, you know, when you crash the net and there's a bunch of guys just kind of hanging out in and around the paint in basketball terms.
Yeah.
You know, good things can happen when you get at and around the rim, just like when you get at and around the goal in hockey, good things will happen for you. So if you're not that perimeter threat, like a Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, James Ennis, if you're not that guy, you might as well be a guy that attacks the rim and tries to get extra offensive opportunities for the team. It's all about kind of finding your role in your niche. And in defense of Wayne Selden, he hasn't been a Grizzly very long. So he's kind of been thrust into this situation where, because Chandler Parsons and Tony Allen are not healthy, if those two guys are playing, Wayne Selden's not. Yeah. I think that's just kind of the bottom line to that. He's in a spot where he's being asked to be in a role that he's not necessarily ready for. And he for the most part, he's doing it as well as you could expect. He just needs to have a coach come up to him, or have coaches instill in him, listen, if your shot's not falling, you need to contribute to the team in other ways.
You know, it's really funny. One of the inside jokes we have on this podcast is that I secretly am a huge hockey fan. I love the NHL. I think the NHL playoffs are every bit as fun as the NBA playoffs. And this is the third straight episode where we've worked hockey into it somehow. So I'm actually really happy that you made that analogy, because, you know, my secret hockey nerd is just screaming for joy right now. You're listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins. Like us on Facebook at Driving Dish NBA podcast. Joe Mullinax has been joining us. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. Check out the website, grizzlybearblues.com. It's a great website. They'll be keeping tabs on this series as it finishes out here. Also, check out Joe's podcast, Grizzly Bear Blues Live. It's a fantastic podcast. Justin and I have both been on it. You'll hear great stuff pertaining to all things Grizzlies, you know, week in and week out. Every time an episode drops, he knows it's going to be great. And Joe's been on this show before, so he knows we like to get him out of here on a light note. So, to which I'll ask you a two-part question. One of them is basketball, one of them is not. The first part of the basketball question is about the series. So now we're tied at two. This episode is going to be dropping ahead of game five. So we have to ask the question, you know, I know you had said Spurs in five. Are you revising that pick at all? Are you shooting the shot and taking your Grizz now? And number two, we intro'd the show with this because Justin asked me this question before we started, and I just don't – I'm borderline offended, but I want to ask another opinion here. We previously talked – or not us, but in the past we've talked about, is a hot dog a sandwich? I know that's been a great Twitter debate. Justin asked the question, is a quesadilla a sandwich? So, Joe, are the Grizzlies going to win the series, and is a quesadilla a sandwich?
I got to be honest, the Grizzlies aren't going to win this series. And it kills me to say that, because, like I said at the beginning of the show, after game four, there is a real sense of, oh my God, they can do this. They can do it again. They can end, like I said, they can end this era the same way it started, by defeating the Spurs in a series they had no business winning. For different reasons, obviously. But you got to tip your cap to Kawhi Leonard. And I just don't see the Grizzlies being able to sustain what Greg Popovich can do with Leonard. You know, Manu Ginobili's not going to go over for the series. There's going to be adjustments that the Spurs make that they're going to have success. And then even if you say, okay, Spurs win game five, the Grizzlies are going do or die game six, the fans will be crazy, they'll have great energy again, and the Grizzlies win game six, I'm not sure what logical person would take the Grizzlies in San Antonio in a game seven.
Well, hold on. Let me say that's what my two co-hosts told me when I said LeBron was going to go, you know, into Golden State and win it game seven, and they shot me down real fast.
This is a fact. Justin last year in the finals, in our first episode before the series started, came out and straight up said, we can go back and we can run the tape back. It's the greatest prediction he's ever made on the show. He says, Cavs in seven, book it. And Tim and I just had the most incredulous looks on our faces. And sure enough, looks like he's the smart one.
You know, every once in a while, you look like the smart one. Broken clocks and blind squirrels and that sort of thing. But, you know, and I'm the same way. I'm just saying, Justin. But I think, I'll be honest, I'm not sure if it's six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Spurs in seven, and I think that that would be a victory in and of itself because they don't have two of their five best players in Chandler Parsons and Tony Allen. But if they can find a way to win game six and you get to a game seven, then all bets are off. Mm-hmm. I just can't go against the better team over the course of the larger sample size of an 82 game season, you know, Kawhi Leonard being, like we said, the second best player in the NBA. It has to be the Spurs. And I just, my heart says Grizzlies in six, because I think they can pick off game five somehow. And I can try to logically argue for that. But again, talking with you guys, talking to somebody from ESPN, talking to whoever it may be, they would give each other the same incredulous looks and they'd be warranted.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to try to retain some of my credibility, you have to be honest with yourself. And I'm not sure if it's six or seven, so I'll kind of cop out there. But I think the Spurs win the series. As far as a quesadilla being a sandwich, to me, a hot dog is not a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most ridiculous thought process ever.
Agreed.
And if you don't think a hot dog is a sandwich, then a quesadilla is not a sandwich. But at the same time, a quesadilla is structured more like a sandwich than a hot dog is.
Right.
So to me, if you argue that a hot dog is a sandwich, then a quesadilla needs to be a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And if you argue that a hot dog is not a sandwich, then I think logically you would say a quesadilla isn't either, but at least in terms of structure, a quesadilla is more sandwich-like than a hot dog, if that makes sense.
I agree. I think it is a sandwich. That's what I'm going with.
I think a quesadilla is more of a sandwich than a hot dog.
I will give Justin that much, and I agree with you, Joe. I do think a quesadilla is more of a sandwich than a hot dog, but I also agree with your original point that neither of them are sandwiches.
Yes.
So with that, we can say the debate is settled. Mr. Joe Mullinax, follow him on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. Check out GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Grizzly Bear Blues Live podcast. Joe, a pleasure as always, man. You know you're a friend of the show, and we appreciate you, man.
Justin, Kevin, looking forward to it. Looking forward to having you guys back on the show in the future, GBB Live. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to the next time.
Thank you.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, star side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.